Lynn, welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange.
Oh, hi. Nice to be here.
Good to have you. October, big month of transition for gardeners. This is the month we're actually going to potentially see our first frost in much of the region.
Right. I mean, the traditional first frost date in the Rogue Valley is around the 20th of October, although that's been pushing out, you know, into later months, into November and such in recent years. But you never know. The way the jet stream is behaving, it could happen anytime.
Well, but that's a question for a longtime gardener like yourself, though. In this climate, is how much adjusting have you and people like you had to do to account for the changes and what's going on with?
I watch the kind of the weekly weather reports, and then I take steps to cover plants or whatever when they say there's a freeze warning, you know, in the Rogue Valley. I just kind of watch it carefully now, much more so than I did in the past, because we could be pretty sure that, you know, when I started gardening here back in the mid-80s, we could be pretty sure that it was going to be around the 20th of October. And so we knew we got in all the tomatoes and we did all that. But now, if I can let things go longer in the garden and ripen out there in the garden, I kind of let them, but I keep a close eye. And I think that's wise for anybody to do.
You know, since you mentioned, I had some things that kind of, they're late bloomers. I mean, spaghetti squash and green peppers, they were just kind of getting going about the middle of September.
Right. And a lot of that has to do, I think, with the excessive heat that we have during our summers now, and that a lot of those vegetables don't like to set fruit in high heat. And so, you know, it's not optimal temperature for them. And so I think a lot of blossoms, even though they might get pollinated, then they tend to drop off in the heat, and so you lose what potential fruit you might have gotten. I don't know, but that's what I've noticed, too, is that things tend to be setting fruit early in the season, and then there's like this time where they're not producing. You know, it's like no new fruit is coming, and then in the closer to fall, you start seeing baby peppers again and more little tomatoes and eggplants and that kind of stuff. So it's a pretty weird situation.
Yeah. Well, if these plants are busy volunteering this stuff for us this late in the season, I mean, should we make any adjustments to watering given the fact that it's darker more than it's light now and all that?
Right. You know, when the temperatures go down, I dial my watering back, and it also turning the water down a bit, because you don't need it. If the temperatures are no longer in the 90s, you need less water. But also a lot of our summer crops respond to the withdrawal of water by ripening their fruit. So you can kind of force them to, you know, well, you're not going to get as much water now, and you need to, you know, wrap things up. And
telling the plant to get with the program.
Yeah, get with the program. Come on, we're heading into winter. You got to get this done. So there's that possibility that, you know, you could withhold some of the watering that you've been doing. Always when the temperatures drop, that's a good idea, just to conserve water. It's difficult when you're trying to irrigate crops through, you know, triple digit temperatures.
You're
using a lot of water.
We're talking to Lynn Kunzman once again on the Jefferson Exchange. She's Master Gardener Extraordinaire and our guest for Garden for Life. I'm Jeffrey Riley. This is the Jefferson Exchange. So obviously we're finishing up a lot of growing season stuff in food gardens and things, but this can be a real time to get busy for stuff you want to have emerge from your garden, from your yard in the future.
Right. Sure. And, I mean, in terms of food crops, you're putting in garlic now, and you can probably put in some of those winter crops, you know, things that will ripen in the fall and winter. Some of those can go in. You can buy seedlings of those at the nurseries, cold weather crops. And then preparing your beds for next season by growing cover crops or you know, tarping them through the season or putting leaves down to rot, those kinds of things. And then for fall planting, I recommend people turn back to their regular gardens and start tucking native plants into your landscape, because this is the perfect time to put in those native plants that are going to produce the insect life that the birds need to feed their young, and you know, just increase the biodiversity in your yard and your neighborhood. So there are a lot of native plant sales going on around the area now, and people should look for those and go and see what they can put in their yards.
So what's a good native cover crop, for example?
Well, native cover crop, the only one that I'm aware of that's used as a cover crop is Phacelia tanacetifolium, and that is a lacy phacelia, which actually, you know, you can buy bulk seeds through some of the seed distribution places like Territorial Seed sells them, and some other places now they're being grown as a cover crop. They will come up in the fall, and they'll just kind of sit there. And then when the spring warms up, they start growing really tall, and they'll get about 2.5-3 feet tall and have blue flowers on them. But by then, of course, you want to start putting in your spring vegetables. So cover crop, in terms of native cover crop, that's the only one that I know of that you can put in, and it will kind of sit there through the winter. Better, I think, to go to the Grange and buy one of the actual winter cover crops that's a mix of like peas and oats and, you know, short season grasses and stuff that will grow through the winter, and they'll get tall, and then you chop and drop them in the spring, and they go back as green manure into your garden beds.
Which is just what it sounds like, chop and drop. You just chop and
leave it. Yeah, you chop it and leave it, and then you plant down through it. Yep.
You know, I've been meaning to ask about this, too, because, you know, gardens can get a little out of your hand if you're gone for a couple of days or something. And so, especially if you haven't taken care of the bindweed over the course of the winter. And so if it, you know, should you, when you pull those weeds out there, I mean, you shouldn't use them for mulch, too, should you? I mean, or is there any?
Well, if you lay them on the surface and let them desiccate, then yes, they're just dead material. Then it's fine to leave them there in the garden. But if there's a chance that they're going to be able to re-root, which many of them will, you know, if given the opportunity, best to put them, you know, somewhere in a green bin. If you've got one that you want to get them off site, you don't want them like the nut sedge that people, you know, people pull out of their gardens all the time. Those have little nuts at the base of the plant, and if you leave those nuts in the garden, they're going to grow a new plant. You know, they're a little storage organ down there, and so those go in the green bin. The other things, if you let them dry on the top of your compost pile, and then, you know, you're adding new material on top of them and they were totally desiccated in the heat, they're going to be fine. They're just going to be organic matter that, you know, you can put back in your yard.
Okay, but drying sounds like it's the key here.
Dry for those things that are real pernicious that you really don't want to see again. Yeah, you either need to really dry them out, let them dry completely, or put them in the green bin, you know, like Bermuda grass. If you just toss it out in the yard, it's just going to find a way to root back in. It's bad news.
So coming back to the stuff you want to use for cover crops for the winter, you mentioned peas and oats and things that grow well through the winter. And of course there's, you know, cabbages and lettuces and things like that are good for they
food crops. Absolutely, there are food crops you can plant. Fava beans are a beautiful winter cover crop, and you also can eat the bean shoots and the beans. You know, so it can be a vegetable and a legume for you to eat, and they're perfect. And also, you can chop and drop them in the spring, and you know, plant in amongst them. So, yeah.
This is Garden for Life on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm talking to Master Gardener Extraordinaire Lynn Kunstman. I'm Jeffrey Riley. And let me go in our last 5 minutes to talk about, first of all, and stop me if I'm getting too scientific here, why do some things like cabbages and lettuce and these peas and oats you're talking about do so well in colder weather? What keeps them growing where the other ones are like, nope, out of here?
I don't know. So in terms of the vegetable crops, they're mostly leaf crops, right? And so they'll continue to grow leaves through the winter. They don't mind winter temperatures. I mean, I've had kale and broccoli that will grow right through winter here, even in 4-degree temperatures, and the plants are resistant to those icing events, right? They have some kind of chemistry, but probably the sulfur compounds in most of those cabbages, broccolis, kales, those kinds of things, that give them some kind of natural antifreeze capacity. I really don't know what the science is behind it, but we do know that those vegetables behave that way. And so things that are growing leaves, even lettuces, there are some lettuces that are quite resistant to frost. And those leaf crops tend to be ones that will grow through the season, and they don't bolt because they have to have day length and heat, right, to send up flower spikes. Mm-hmm. And so they will last through the winter season. Many of them will last through the winter season or grow well into fall. And so they're not going to bolt on you. And when spring hits, then they're going to send up flower stalks and they'll be inedible. Uh-huh. But, you know, you can harvest them. You can cut and come again, take leaves off your kale, take leaves off your lettuce, and do that through the winter. Especially if you want to keep frost off them, put a cloche over that bed where you're growing those crops, and that will actually trap a little heat as well, and so they'll thrive in that environment. Yeah.
Okay. About 3 minutes left to talk about thinking, not just about the things you want to plant and eat, but stuff you want to see that is a better ecosystem in your garden. And you've got some steps for increasing biodiversity in yards
right.
and neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, if you want the steps fairly quickly, the first is to, eliminate half your lawn, because lawns are just huge pollutants and green deserts in our environment. And there's a lot of research online. People can look that up. The second one is to plant native vegetation. Find some place that is growing native plants. Make sure they're, locally sourced native plants. And tuck those in where you can put them in your yard. Remove invasives. So removing things like butterfly bush or some of the pest grasses that get out of our yards and into the environment. Those little wild plums that come up everywhere, take those out, those kinds of things. So taking out invasive plants that are going to move off your property into the environment and cause damage in our ecosystems. And then planting keystone plants, things like oak trees, our native cherries, and our native willow, if you have room on your property for those. Or if you just need to grow flowers, then things like sunflowers, which are North American natives, asters, our native asters, and we've got many of those for sale in the nursery out at Extension, and then goldenrods. Those are the three keystone flowers that everybody should have in their yard for our migrating butterflies mm-hmm. to fatten up on before they head south. So, yeah.
All right, so a good list there. Get rid of half your lawn, plant natives,
right.
remove invasives, and plant the keystone species.
Oh, and turn out your lights at night. Please, mm-hmm. everybody who's listening to this, go and get motion sensor lights for your driveways and porches, because it's migration season, and the birds are dying by the millions because they're attracted to our streetlights and house lights. Same with our nighttime pollinators, which are really the most important pollinators, are our moths. And so they are being killed in their millions every night by people's stupid porch lights. And they just need to get rid of those and put in motion sensor lights. Then if something dangerous comes up your driveway, the lights will come on and the bad man will run away.
Okay. So think big, though. I mean, think beyond the garden. You think in terms of a whole ecosystem. Wow.
Yeah.
So, all right. So this will be the end of our conversations probably for the winter, and we'll come back in the spring when the growing season returns. But it's always a pleasure. Lynn Kunzman is Master Gardener Extraordinaire and our guest here on Garden for Life on the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks, Lynn.
Thanks a lot.
I'm Jeffrey Riley.